Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. Hosted by Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Now listen up. It's time to crush the curse.
Hello, podcast listeners. I've had a lot of questions about the Vitality Shift. This is a program that my wife, Brandy McDonald, and I have created, and people are just asking more questions about how they learn about it and what kind of forms it comes in. And so what I want to just let people know is that you can do the Vitality Shift two different ways. We have an online program called the Vitality Shift, and you can find information at www.thevitalityshift.com. And the second thing is we do a live immersion day where we spend basically 8 hours going through the whole program, role-playing, helping to move your whole practice more towards a vitalistic model. We really work on communication, refining your premise, covering neurological objective findings so we can actually measure subluxation, and then going through care planning. And we realize that a lot of people are different and so people heal at different levels. We've created four different healing archetypes, which kind of help us when we're doing the care planning process and also on reevaluations. So if you're interested in that, we actually have two live immersion days right now planned, one for London, England in June and one for Perth, Australia in September. And if you're wanting to look at more information about that, check out our website, www.trueconceptseminars.com. Again, that's www.trueconceptseminars.com. And we'll also put down any other new locations that we'll be hitting. So if we get to run into you somewhere around the world, we'd love that. And I just want to take this opportunity to explain a little bit about our program. And now you can get back to the podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. Today, I'm staying in my house and my guest is upstairs. And her name is Brandy McDonald, and she's my wife, and she's amazing. And we decided we're going to have our little conversation today on the podcast about relationships, and we're really going to target the three key relationships in the chiropractic office. One is with you and your spouse or significant other, you and your team, and how the team communicates, and how your whole team communicates with all your practice members to have a nice, thriving, healthy office. And to help explain that and break it down for us, we have the one and only, the amazing Brandy McDonald.
Oh my God. Your Casey Kasem top 40 voice just kills me. Can you not talk? I don't think I can take you seriously in that voice.
I'm just kidding. I like to do it for fun because you always make fun of my voice. So I'm just doing that.
Your Casey Kasem top 40. Yes. Hi, Dr. Don.
Welcome to the podcast, my
Thank
dear.
Thank you. Our regular every 2 or 3 month update on the McDonald's.
Yep. So what's been new with you?
It's a great question. Since we last talked, the last one we did, I think, was Christmas, right? Boundaries at Christmas.
Yep.
That was our last podcast that we did together. So it's been a busy first quarter at Southside Chiropractic. Ironically, this year I decided to travel less because I knew that we were going to be growing our team and growing our new associate. And that requires me to be in Edmonton more than not in Edmonton, like I was last year. So it's been a busy last 3 months. We've been helping our associate. He's doing a great job. He's been in practice for just a couple months. We have had a staff growth and some turnover as we find the right person.
Well, let's talk about that little story about the unfortunate benefits of chiropractic care.
You see,
chiropractic is amazing, but sometimes chiropractic is a little bit too amazing and it kind of will piss us off a bit. So.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So we hired a little girl who she was childbearing age, so we should have known she, and her plan was eventually to have children. We knew that. We just didn't expect her to do that within a day or a week starting practice. So she got pregnant right away after 9 years of her and her husband not getting pregnant.
Trying to get pregnant. And I think it was probably 2 or 3 weeks into getting adjusted. And then all of a sudden she's pregnant. I was like, whoa. Pregnant.
So she was quite shocked by that. And we were shocked by that. And so she was within her first 3 months and she just really wasn't adapting well to all the changes in her body. And so she just really could not sustain the level of engagement we needed her to sustain as she was basically vomiting her face off for 10 hours a day. So it really wasn't working out for her. So although it was lovely that she was in ease to get pregnant, she was not so much in ease once she got pregnant and was having some challenges. So we spent 2 months training her and then started all over again.
That's adaptability.
Practice. Yeah. That's right. I get a lot of questions because at one time people thought I was a CA trainer and that just drove me crazy. So I was like, the only CA training I'm doing is in my own office. I don't really want to train anybody else's CAs. And it's not that I have a problem with training CAs. It's just not my shtick. I mean, I do this every day, all day, all the time in my office. I really have no desire to do it outside my office. But, you know, there's a lot of, I think, we have a really unique view in the office in the sense that when people don't make it, we're not really into the whole, like, somebody's going to be with us for 20 years. And although we've had quite a few, I think we've had now coming up on 3 long, 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 long-term staff, like 7, 8, 9 years that have been with us. And then since move on, which is great. If you have a stable person, but I mean, the ones that have been churned and burned out of our office are what we call our thirds. So you call them the backup goalies if people watch hockey, but they're the thirds. They're the bullpen staff. They're the ones that are not the main staff. And so I think if you can set the main staff as being your main staff and those ones stay, like we have a lead CA and we have another little girl who's been there now as a CA, what we call level 2, who's a tech CA. And so this girl was our third. And it's not awesome to pour all that training into somebody and have them leave, but it's not significant to the practice in any stretch of the imagination other than significant for my time and effort retraining somebody new. So hopefully this next girl, she's also childbearing age, but she's not married. And I asked her, is she planning on having children? And she said, not anytime in the near future. So all good news. So yeah, so it's been busy last 3 months at Southside Chiropractic.
We almost have to have a policy that they're not allowed to get adjusted if they're childbearing years. They're not allowed to fully express their potential.
Yeah, that'll go over really well, I'm sure.
That's hilarious. But that's a good point, though, for chiropractors out there, because I know a lot of times when we're traveling around and we're talking to chiropractors, they get super frustrated because, you know, they put all their time or, you know, you've heard this too. They'll like take them to a seminar, right? And then as soon as they get home, they quit.
Yep.
And they're all frustrated because they invested in them. But the cool thing is that if they're going to leave your office, we kind of almost want to expedite it.
Yep, totally.
Because we don't want that to stay in there and kind of become like a cancer throughout your office. Because the damage that keeping's the wrong person for a long period of time in your office is far worse and far more costly than getting somebody who's right. But I was using the analogy of like, we're in Edmonton, so the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, as long as we have a Connor McDavid, which we have, which is an amazing, like we have the Brandon.
Yeah, well, for the rest of the world who listens to your podcast, they have no idea who Connor McDavid is. So maybe you should just say who that is.
Well, he's only the best hockey player in the whole world. And we have him on our team.
And that's ice hockey for those countries that don't watch hockey.
Yeah, on ice with a little puck and stuff. But like when you have that top notch of a player, then, you know, we need to surround them with support people, right?
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing. So if we make sure that we find the right people, and then if they leave, it's not a big deal because we still have the core people. So that's our luxury.
Well, it's not a luxury. It's a strategy. So yeah. It's not like we lucked out with that. Part of what I think most offices are is they're understaffed. So when you're understaffed and the one person, like if this was your one person, this little girl who got pregnant and then couldn't make it, then what? So what is the one person you have? And I know offices that don't even have staff. And I mean, I love Grant Cardone talks about small businesses that like just, well, they'll never do anything other than just what they can do on their own because they don't hire enough staff because it's an expense and it's expensive. And we've always had, I would say we've always been somewhat overstaffed and understaffed from that perspective because we never want to be in a position where we are actually in a relationship with somebody that we're hostage by them. And you only get into hostage holding relationships when you don't have strategy in your office. And so that I think is probably the biggest barrier for, since we're talking about relationships with teams, that's one of the biggest barriers that a lot of offices have is they are in hostage negotiations all the time, rather than actually having a strategy for building your team, building their esteem, ensuring they become advocates. I mean, we have a unique office and a lot of our shifters do the same thing. They're moving to this model where their team does everything. Mm-hmm. The chiropractor, the only thing the chiropractor does is educate and adjust, because that's the only thing that they can do that nobody else can do. And so that, but that does take a lot of time and effort and talent from the trainer and life force from the trainer. And, but it's strategy. It's, yeah. It's not lucking out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got it. We've like the luck has been 18 years of working on it.
Totally. Right.
Right. And going to like hundreds of seminars and investing thousands of dollars in coaching and learning all the time. That being said, the chiropractors there, I know we have some shifters in our group that are in from Quebec and they have some pretty stringent mm-hmm. laws. So wherever you are at, the key thing is to like almost create a delegation list.
Yeah.
Of things that you can delegate, right? Yeah. And then if you're required by your state or province to be doing certain parts of the exam, then you just do that. But if you have more leeway,
yep.
Get her done.
Totally.
And, do it. And for us, like for me, like especially at this stage of my practice, I would way rather have too many staff.
Yeah.
Than not enough. Because if we get not enough staff and things are all chaotic at the office, like that again, the damage is gonna be far worse than having a little higher payroll numbers.
Well, at a certain level in your practice, like for us, yeah, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, you could have handled one CA, mm-hmm. right? Because we weren't that busy. So like the world changes when you're full. So when yeah. your schedule is full, if we didn't have a tech CA or two CAs on all the time, how do you get that? You actually can't practice. You actually can't do what we call our long visits because you're seeing people. So mm-hmm. there's... Once you have that level in your practice, you no longer think about how little staff can I have. You're not thinking about, you're like, okay, I need to have actually more than I need. And the event that I have this backup goalie or the third, as we call them, or whatever, the bullpen staff member, so that when something happens, because stuff is going to happen. It just yeah. like, it, you know, a lot of people are just like, just devastated. Like it happens. Yeah. This kind of stuff happens. Like, God, I told somebody in our shifter group that I've been through more part-time CAs than I have shoes. I have a lot of shoes. So like stuff happens. But if you don't have a strategy that just doesn't devastate your office, you're like, okay, we're on to the next. Onward and upward, away we go. And so I think that's important for people, is that a lot of us are planning our relationship with our team based on the level we're at now, not based on where we want to go. And again, you're only going to get the results than what you're getting now. Mm-hmm. So with every strategy you have, including your team relationships, you plan it as if you want it to be there, and then you work towards getting there. And it's certainly not that you don't have enough people and that you are in hostage negotiations all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I just came to mind an analogy of a pilot. So if you have a pilot for a plane on a small airplane, and we have a few of these where they might fit like 8 or 6 people. The pilot loads everybody. Yeah. They loads the totally. Bag. They load totally. The bags. They
scariest flight I ever took. Yeah.
They pass the peanuts back, or if they
totally. Yeah, totally.
They do everything right.
Totally. Yeah.
But if you have like a 747, and it, all of a sudden you need other people to load the bags, and you need other people to do the checks, and you need other people to make sure that the plane is fueled, and if they don't show up for work, that plane is not flying.
That's a great analogy, actually, because again, I remember taking a plane that had 8 seats. Like I was flying from, the Canadians will understand this, I was flying from Halifax, Nova Scotia to Fredericton, New Brunswick, which is in the Maritimes, in this little like 10-seater plane. And I remember I took a picture because the pilot did the safety briefing like a flight attendant did. Like
turn around in a seat in the cockpit. And...
No, he did actually stand up. But like, I think it was after he put bags in, perhaps. And then he was like doing the safety briefing, left the door open, the cockpit was wide open in case we needed to talk to him in this little 30-minute flight. Which again, now when we fly on the Dreamliners, when we're going to Australia or we're going to Europe, you actually don't even see the pilots at all. So that is a great analogy. And I just think about even our office, like it's funny, we have CAs that you'll go all day, you won't even see them. They don't see you. You don't see them. All you care about is that, are their tables loaded? Are the visits done? Do we, you know, are people going where they need to go? And you don't see them at all. So I think that's an awesome, analogy. Because, and that's the difference. Yes.
Yeah. And like you said, that's why you, if you are understaffed, they will hold you hostage, because if you're at an airport and the baggage people go on strike.
That's right.
Nothing's,
everything's toast.
You're done. If you're the own solo airplane guy, you just like, hey, give me your bags and I'll throw them on myself. We're good.
Awesome.
That's the guy doing
awesome
all the scheduling, right? So
yeah, awesome.
So that's why I like to be a little bit overstaffed at the moment, because we want to make sure that we're still flying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's cool. So let's get into a little bit stuff about the relationship. So maybe we'll start off with chiropractor or the owners of the practice, especially if people work together, or if and even if you don't. What are some of the challenges you see with how relationships, if they're not flourishing or evolving, how they can affect the practice negatively?
So you're talking about relationships with the team or relationships with one another? Who you're talking
with
about?
With one another. So it's like the leadership. So we're going to talk about leadership. We're going to kind of go like, we're going to use the analogy like of a body. So the owners or the leaders of the practice is the brain. And then the staff are going to be like the body. And then all of our practice members are going to be like the environment. So we're going to have that whole nice congruent communication. So we're going to start with the brain, the leadership of the practice. What are some things to look out for and with the relationships that chiropractors are having in their own life and how that affects work?
Well, I think in my past life, that was my specialty, right? Is teaching relationship dynamics. And I think that one of the things that I see, which is not just for chiropractors, it's for everybody, that everybody goes into relationship, whether it's in relationship with your team, whether it's in relationship with your practice members, or whether it's your intimate relationships or with your children, parental relationships as well. Everybody goes into a relationship standing on a foundation. So imagine yourself with your own little foundation and you stand on that. And that foundation is really, if you imagine your life, has built that foundation. So it's everything that you've learned as a kid. It's all your life experiences. It's all the things that work for you. It's all the things that don't work for you. It's your belief system. It's how you view the world. It's all of those things that creates your foundation. And you walk into every relationship with your own foundation, and the other person walks in with their foundation. Relationships are really those two foundations coming together to build one foundation. That's really what a relationship is. And so you come into relationship with somebody else who has also their own foundation. And the two of you now try to create relationship, hopefully long-term relationship, by now taking those two foundations and molding them into one foundation, because that's what forms the relationship. So you can imagine that if you go into relationship, and it actually doesn't matter what relationship you're going into, that's the myth. I think we can be one way with somebody and we're totally somebody else with, so for example, I can be one way with you and I'll be totally different with my staff. That's actually not true, because every time you turn around, there you are. Your foundation is always there. Is there a degree of decorum that is different when you're like in leadership and obviously you're paying people to work for you and people are paying you for a service? Of course there is. Of course there is. But the foundation is still the foundation. And the foundation is still who you are as a person. Not of what your skill set is. It's who you are as a person. And so you can imagine if you go into relationship with somebody with your cracked foundation, and many people come then into your relationship in relationship with you with their own cracked foundation. Now we've got these two cracked foundations, and now we're going to build a house on top of it. And the house will ultimately become the relationship. It doesn't work. And very often, all of those cracks that are in our individual foundations become huge when we then try and meld and build a foundation together.
Well, and I think the funny thing is that when you have two people with cracked foundations, they're very aware of the other person's cracked foundation.
Totally.
And so they're a lot of times relationship, what they're trying to do is recommend to the other person how to fix their trends.
Absolutely.
Their foundation. And that usually doesn't go very well, because the only foundation we can ever work on is our own.
That's right. So, and the reason you can see all the cracks in somebody else's foundation It's because you have your own cracks. You just don't realize it. And they're reflecting on you. And so you kind of, you hear that and you see memes about it. And like, you know, I see Facebook posts about it. And I'm like, ugh. Like it's logically people understand that theory. But in when the rubber hits the road in reality, very few people want to start fixing their own cracks. They would far rather try and fix somebody else's cracks in their foundation, because from their perspective, if you just fixed your cracks, I would be fine. This relationship would thrive. So let's just get to work with a hammer and a chisel and whatever else we need on your cracks. And then we're all going to be happy together. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that even if that were to work, which it will garner some results if you find somebody who's so broken in the relationship that you actually can actually repair some of their cracks and help them through that, your foundation is still cracked. So at some point you're going to have to deal with it or not, because ultimately two cracked foundations trying to build a house, ultimately the house is going to start to crumble. And I would say that longevity in relationships are more now unnatural than natural. And a lot of reason for that is because we have these huge gaping holes in our personal foundations, and we go into relationship with other humans who also have the same thing. And then we try and build relationship on top of these foundations. And so that is across the board. That happens with your, so if you think about it, you have all these different foundations. You have your intimate relationship foundation, and then you have your team relationship foundation, and you have your practice member foundation. And then you look at it, what's really interesting is that I see, you know, maybe you're really, really good. I see this a lot in chiropractic, really good at maybe building relationship with practice members. Because what happens is you take the strongest part of your foundation, because they only see you for a few minutes. They don't need to be there very long. You're maybe an excellent communicator. You're an excellent clinician and technician. Right. And that's the strongest part. And a lot of people then use that part of their practice to think that they're okay then, and the rest of their cracks in their foundation, yet their intimate relationships fall apart. They're massively judgmental with their staff members. They maybe are a nightmare to work for, because it's not that they don't have those really solid parts of their foundation within them, because they do. The challenge is they don't know how to totally fill all the cracks. So they go into relationship with other people and are like different people. But you're not a different person. It's just what is brought out of you with certain people. And the more damaged somebody is with you, they tend to bring out the most amount of damage in you.
Well, and I think too, the more familiar you are with somebody, the harder it is to create boundaries, the more likely those lines all blur. And if you have practice members, I was just talking to this with our associate, is that when you're, starting to grow your practice, sometimes you kind of hang out a little bit too much with your practice members and they become kind of friends.
Yeah.
And those are usually the worst practice members, because like when you know someone really well, it's hard to be objective with them and it's hard to create a boundary with them. And the as your practice gets busier, you don't have time.
Yeah.
So the token of being busy, and not being able to spend that much time with them because you have a busy practice, it automatically sets up a boundary. So it's easier to be objective.
Well, that's a crack though, because a crack in the foundation in chiropractic in relationship is believing that's part of the value of why somebody is seeking you out.
Right.
That's a self-esteem crack. And so it's a tough thing as a chiropractor to not fill that crack, because if you recognize you go into relationship with the practice members and you have a self-esteem crack, you are going to fill it by whatever it takes to make you feel better, which is one of the pathologies in chiropractic and the relationship we build with our practice members. And it is, now I'm a social worker by trade, and I will tell you that most of our schooling is spent teaching social workers how to not do that, because that is the wounded healer phenomenon. And it is taking, and very many, a lot of people that go into social work, same as chiropractic, have had some experience in their life where they feel like they've been saved or they've been helped or they have been walked through some trauma or whatever. And in their mind, they say to themselves, I'm going to do this for somebody else. Well, then what I do is I go into relationship with somebody I'm working with, and now I'm trying to fill that void, that need, that self-esteem crack by their feedback to me rather than providing my excellent clinical skills, which is really the reason why somebody is seeking you. And when you can't do that, then that's why you don't have objectivity. That is why you have emotional engagement with people that won't allow you to set boundaries, because you can't set boundaries when you're in an emotional relationship with somebody beyond that professional relationship that you should have as a clinician to a practice member or to a chiropractor to a practice member. And so it's really navigating that, because that is a crack in the foundation for a chiropractor when they go into relationship with a practice member.
Well, and we've seen this with chiropractors that we've been coaching as well, where in their past, they felt like they didn't have power, or they had their power taken away. And so they remember themselves as a little boy or girl who didn't have this. And how they think they're going to fix their foundation subconsciously is by helping enough other people with their foundation or helping other people like through chiropractic care. And then they wonder why after years and years of doing that, it still feels empty, because that actually it's different when you've kind of worked on your own foundation and now you just serve for the sake of serving, not serving in the hopes that it's going to fill something that you were missing.
Well, that's because if you don't fill your own crack, what you're trying, you own everybody's cracks. You own everybody's broken foundations when you are trying to fill your own broken foundation by other relationships. Mm-hmm. So because of that, if you're trying to prove something, or you're going to be like, I'm not going to be that kid, I'm not going to be that woman, I'm not going to be that whatever, so therefore I'm going to martyr myself and I do all these things, it still feels empty. It feels empty because you're owning everybody's brokenness as far as their foundation is concerned. And if you know you're owning everybody's brokenness, I'm telling you, it's not their brokenness, it's the problem. It's you're standing on a foundation that's unstable for yourself. And so like the best story I can say about that, because I never teach theory, I always teach reality, what's happened for me or for us, is that, you know, that's sort of how I was like when I first, you know, woke up to chiropractic. You know, and I was pissed. I was pissed off that I was like, you know, at that time 28 and had spent my whole life so sick. And then all of a sudden I'm like, how am I now just learning this? How am I now getting results back that I'm totally healthy? And the other end of the spectrum was at 40, I'd be basically dead. I was so mad. And so then I was like, so therefore I'm going to war. Like I'm going to war with everybody. I'm going to war with everybody who doesn't believe chiropractic. I'm going to war with my family. I'm going to war. I'm just saying to people like, are you an idiot? Like how stupid are you? Like it's like the reformed smoker sort of idea. Like I was, it was horrible. And that lasted for about 5 years because my foundation was cracked. Because what it was for me was not a matter of, you know, throwing the life preservers out and knowing that only a few people will grab them. And my job was not to swim out, and I can't swim. So to try and get people and drown myself, because I literally cannot swim, right? Where and lay my neck on the guillotine for every single person that didn't understand chiropractic. Because what was driving that was a crack. And the crack was I didn't understand it. Therefore, I was going to do everything I could to make sure people understood this rather than not owning that, but really filling that crack for myself, that it was what it was. And it came to me in the time it came to me, in the time it was supposed to come to me. It wasn't supposed to come to me. I was not supposed to be healed and whole and healthy at 12. I was just not supposed, otherwise it would have come to me at 12. It came to me at 28. Mm-hmm. So rather than spending my life forcing something on somebody, or feeling, that's when the emptiness starts to happen, because you force it and you're disappointed all the time in people. And if you know, if you're disappointed all the time with people, that you cannot build a house with anybody. You just can't. But that's not, the problem is not with the people. The problem is with your foundation.
Well, and that kind of reminds me, because that was back in around the time that we did that one test. And I think, I can't remember what it's called, axiology or whatever. Yeah. And what was kind of interesting is you came back from that test that you filled out. And it said that the challenge that you're going to have is that you're very empathetic and you understand what people need.
Right.
But you're so good at it. Like most people aren't going to be able to return that.
Right.
And that is going to be a frustration for you. And I think that was kind of a neat thing that we just went through. And then you're like, that made a lot of sense. So, cause there's always just these little learnings that kind of open the door. And I think that was one of them, just saying like, you know, we all have different skills. Like everybody has different skills. they're going to be better than most people that you meet.
Yeah.
But having the expectation that everyone should have the exact same skills as you back, that's going to create a huge amount of frustration with all your relationships.
Well, and especially if it's a feeling, because if it's when we did that test, which was that axiology test, which was really fascinating, I think it was part of what was a light bulb for me was I can't remember because there's all the percentages, like very few people have that ability to, it's beyond empathy because a lot of people are empathetic. It's almost like, what's the word? What happens?
Intuitive.
Like that crazy hyper intuition.
Yeah.
It's almost like a hyper intuition. I think everybody's
a little brandy voice.
Intuitive, but it's like hyper intuition. Now that hyper intuition for a long time for me was pretty cracked because I had an expectation that as much as I would give to somebody, they would give that exact same thing back. So I don't know that I would have admitted it at the time that I was expecting that back. Mm-hmm. But I definitely was, because then I have a trail of bodies behind me of people who didn't give it back to me. And so, but then I was just consistently disappointed. Mm-hmm. And so rather than using that hyper intuition, although I'm fairly opinionated, I know I don't give unsolicited advice anymore. And so the only people that now get that hyper intuition from me, if they want to ask me for it.
Right.
And so that you do learn how to take what potentially could be a barrier for you. For me, the crack wasn't the hyper intuition that I have with people. The crack was the expectation and disappointment, because I was expecting something back in relationship that didn't come to me. Mm-hmm. That's the crack. So then what you do is you find ways to fill that, which is the fact that when I'm spraying and praying unsolicited advice over everybody and laying my neck on the guillotine and trying to save everybody and realizing they don't want it. And then I'm upset and I'm mad and I'm like, I gave you all this, you gave me nothing back. That's the crack, not the intuition. So now that I still have that hyper intuition, the difference is somebody has to ask me for it.
Right. It's like, and
I get paid for it.
Right. Right? You're not kind of wasting your superpowers on people who don't appreciate it, and then you get frustrated.
Yes. And so I think that everybody has superpowers with people in relationship. Mm-hmm. It becomes a superpower when you can negotiate and navigate your way through your foundation and their foundation. Then you actually have a superpower in your relationship. If you can't do that, everything that could be a superpower becomes a barrier in relationship. And so all the things that you are good at and that you love, if you're not careful, or that they're married with emotions or altered views of life or expectations, that's actually where relationships actually start to break down. Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about delaying gratification, because this is one of the things I put in my book, The Underdog Curse, after we heard about that Don't Eat the Marshmallow Yet study.
Yep.
And that was one of the interesting things is that a lot of people, two-thirds of the people cannot delay gratification. And the one-third of the people who could, the children, 18 years later, were more successful in all areas of their life because they were able to delay gratification. And I think one of the challenges is not being able to delay gratification in a relationship.
Yep.
And maybe can you touch a little bit about on how that affects things? And if you're a total marshmallow eater in your relationships, what are some steps you can take to improve that?
Oh, well, if you're a total marshmallow eater in your relationship, which means you don't delay gratification at all, you'll never fix your foundation.
Yep.
Because like, if you've ever had to fix a foundation in a house, it like takes some time.
And it's not fun at the beginning.
Yeah. So we'd far rather, similar to that analogy, we'd far rather aesthetically fix things. So shit that doesn't matter. Like, we talk about stuff that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And the disagreements we have in relationship, particularly in intimate relationships, don't freaking matter. There just happened to be the fact that you see the window covering looks crooked. Why? Because the freaking foundation is crooked. So we buy new window coverings and we fix all of these things aesthetically in our relationship, but has nothing to do with that. And so I would say, if you can delay gratification, you don't ever do the work that you need to do for your own foundation, because what you do is you constantly get into conversation or disagreement about things that simply don't matter. They are not the point.
You're kind of dancing around the problem.
And they're not the problem. It's not the problem. Like it's, yeah, it's just, it's, we're going to have so many times if I hear, if I'm involved in any kind of like, you know, intimate relationship advice or, you know, with their spouse and they're having a hard time relating or making decisions, oh God, parenting, all of that kind of stuff. The conversation is never the conversation. And so I think that if you can't delay gratification, you can't actually do the work that you need to do. Because a relationship, again, here's a good meme that everybody theoretically knows, relationships are hard work. But then what does that mean?
Right.
Like you are always, here's the crazy, most of the time in our intimate relationships, we will go into relationship with somebody who is just as damaged as we are as far as our foundations. Mm-hmm. Because that is actually attractive to us, because one of the jobs of a relationship is not to make you happy. And I'm really like, oh my God, the job of a relationship, when it's done well, because happiness is gratification, right? So happiness happens in the side of your brain that really is not long-term. It's short-term. It's like a quick fix. And so what happens with our quick fix relationships is we feel happy, 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 happy. That's, and then all of a sudden when that's done, then what? And so it's just like you and I know somebody who's in a new relationship and they are somebody who has a massively cracked foundation. And we've watched them cycle through a few relationships, not in a healthy way. And this new relationship, which is about 3 or 4 weeks in, they were doing the whole romantic with all over each other. They're in their 40s. Okay. So we're not talking about 12-year-olds here. Right. And it was all very cute. And the new partner said, it will always be like this. This will never change.
And we looked at each other right away.
And we looked at it. We said, I said, have you been married before? And the partner said, no, but this is it. Now, the other partner that we know really, really well, who has now cycled through a few of these relationships who started, sadly, exactly as we observed this one relationship starting, Dawn and I both went, ooh, that's amazing. Good for you. Because you got to know when somebody wants you to give an opinion and not give an opinion. And that's a time when somebody does not want an opinion.
No.
But that's what I mean by not, yes, that's all lovely and exciting, but it's cycled through quickly. And so if you can't, if you have nothing past the cycling through quickly and that happiness sort of side where you get that little shot, you get a little good shot of a good hormone, you're like, ooh, that's amazing. If you are not able to find that sort of sustainable joy that happens in a relationship, and it's not, it actually does not have anything to do with happiness at all. It has to do with the sustained result of consistently working on the foundation so that the house gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. And that is not something that comes naturally, and it's not something that comes easily. And I would suggest that most of us have grown up in relationship with our parents that have not always taught us what that looks like. And even if they did, it may not be what you want. So assessing through, even if your parents have been together for 75 years, perhaps that's not exactly what you want. So it I think it's a matter of assessing out what you want, because the job of the relationship is not to make you happy. The job of the relationship is to find the sustained joy in the work that comes in the minute by minute, day by day, week by week work of a relationship. And yes, of course, you want enjoyment of one another, but the job of your partner is not to make you happy or to fulfill you or to complete you or to do any of the things that we think that they should do for us. Mm-hmm. In fact, the job of your partner is not to do for anything for you. The job of your partner is to really consistently work on their own foundation and you consistently work on yours. And then together, the new foundation that you make, the two of you are responsible for that co-foundation. And figuring out what's mine, what's yours, and what's together actually is the job of a relationship.
Well, and I think too, you end up attracting someone who's totally different than you anyway. So, you know, at the beginning of the relationship, you're kind of like, you're like sharp objects, like you got pointy edges and you're a little bit frisky on your ends of the spectrum. And then I think over time, you learn from each other. Like for a great example for us was we learned about stuff. So I was basically would never tell anybody anything and I would never have confrontation ever. And then you would only have confrontation. You're like, every single thing you had to stand for, you had to stand for it.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've learned to stand up more for myself, and you've learned to like pick your battles. So it's kind of like those different parts of the personality style. I think that's part of a relationship, is just kind of learn that you kind of come a little bit more to the center. Because that's part of a marriage, I think, is you got learning how to, like, you know, compromise a bit and understanding. Because if you're by yourself, you can just worry about yourself.
Yeah.
When you're in a relationship, you want to take enough time to find out what's important to the other person. And even if some of the stuff isn't what you like, still honor that, because that's, everybody's different. And if there's two people that are the exact same, that's really not that exciting to, you know. As DeMartini used to say, if you have two people exact same, there's no need for one of them.
That's right. You're irrelevant. Well, and also I think if we're trying to change somebody else, right? Like, that's the big thing. It's like, I will hear this when I'm listening to people who are maybe having challenges. They'll say stuff like, well, they're just trying to change me. Or, you know, the pathology of the female is trying to change the partner that she's met.
We'd be all good if they just did this.
Right. And so the thing is that if you think about that story you just told about us, where I was like, again, because that was one of my cracks, was to never be that kid. I'll never be that kid. I'll never be that woman again. So therefore I'm going to think that by picking every battle and standing up for everything and fighting for those who can't fight for themselves, that was the way I should be in the world. But it was from a damaged place. It wasn't from a whole place. And yours was that I'm going to be invisible. Because the more invisible I am, the more likable I am, but then you're just irrelevant. And so those two things, although we had conversation about it, that was who you were to some degree. But as soon as you realized what you wanted, I didn't make you do that. You didn't make me say, okay, this is actually not coming from a place of being whole. It's coming from a place of being cracked. Mm-hmm. Then I can come closer to the middle, and then you can come closer to the middle, not because I want you to, but because you want to. Not because you want me to, it's because I want to. It's because I see that.
Yeah, and this totally reminds me of the Jim Rohn quote. When when he was getting married, he said he wanted his vows to be, I promise to look after me for you, if you promise to look after you for me.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's the biggest challenge in intimate relationships. I mean, I see this all the time in chiropractic. I get asked this all the time in chiropractic. One of the spouses is on a health regime and the other one is not. Mm-hmm. And not only does it start to become a values compromise, it becomes a life problem, because somebody's life is at risk. And how do you, the biggest question I get is, how do I get my spouse, my partner, to do that? And I'm like, this is what I think people don't understand about relationships. You can't.
Right.
You only have your own foundation. And if the two of you have built a broken foundation together, you can't fix a broken foundation by yourself. And there is a time where it's so far gone, the foundation is so crumbled, the relationship does have to end. And, you know, I think that if we understand, and whether that is in relationship, in an intimate relationship, whether that is in your team relationship, or whether that's in your practice member relationship, taking responsibility for being part of the crumbled relationship is so important. I love it, like, sarcastically, listening to people talk about their divorces. It is, if you want to know how little people see their own broken foundation in a breakdown, listen to somebody talk about a divorce. It is always the other person's fault.
Yep.
No matter what happens, the person, whoever you're listening to, never says, I brought my broken, cracked foundation into this marriage. Together, which we built a broken, cracked foundation. And I am not surprised that we couldn't sustain it. No, nobody ever says that.
No, that would be like, holy, that's very
God. Everybody has. So you really, you know, and it's really bizarre. I don't know why I say it shouldn't be, how little people take responsibility for their part in a relationship. The fact that somebody else is responsible to make it work is simply not the case. And life gets, I'm telling you, life gets so much easier when you live your life responsibly. When you, you know what? It's not an easy pill to swallow. Like I listen, I'm the personality that I'm not one in those early years, not an easy person to be around. So I'm telling you, if I can come around, for God's sakes, where in my opinion, nothing was ever my fault, and I had no responsibility for anything. And if people just did things the way I did it, think that the world would be perfect. Mm-hmm. So I can appreciate today when somebody's in that point. I cannot appreciate if somebody can't move past that point, because they are almost impossible to work with, and they're impossible to build a sustainable delayed gratification relationship with them, because they have no insight into what their responsibility is, which is ultimately why we've lost who used to manage our office, right? I mean, we've made some serious relationship ending decisions with people that have been in our life for some time, because we will only do it to the degree in which somebody, we have our part we play, they have their part we play, but everybody has to be 100% responsible. And as soon as somebody is 100% responsible and the other person is not 100% responsible, the relationship's not going to last. It's mm-hmm. just not, you can't make somebody do something.
Now let's pretend someone's listening to this podcast in their car and they haven't been very self-aware. Yeah. This is you have to be self-aware somewhat to know that you're not self-aware.
How is somebody going to know they're not self-aware?
I'm just saying, pretend. Pretend.
Okay.
Okay, or say
all
somebody.
All of a sudden, like a little fairy came down, they're like, boing, they're self-aware now.
Yeah, I'm self-aware.
Okay.
Or someone wants to be more self-aware.
Okay.
What could somebody do to be a little more self-aware? Because again, if you're not self-aware, the whole everything stops. You're done.
Okay, well, I'll tell you how I was more self-aware, because I was not self-aware. How about that?
Yeah, let's do that.
If I looked around my life in my 20s and 30s, I looked around and I looked at how many relationships I sustained. It was almost none. Mm-hmm. And so I had met a lot of people, had a lot of friends, had a lot of surface relationships. But I churned and burned like every work I had. I churned and burned all my friends. I was constantly disappointed. It was always somebody's fault. No matter what I did, it didn't make a difference. I would catch myself saying stuff like that. So you do need some quiet time of reflection to say, you know, is that the case? Because if you're unable to really build a relationship, our marriage was not slated to last, in my opinion, in my brain, right?
Oh, mine it was.
Oh, really? In those times? No, it wasn't.
I'm just kidding.
We were having a hard time, right? Because we had a bunch of cracks that we didn't really see our part in.
Yeah.
And so that's really where I started to look at what's going on. Like, there's one common denominator. And it doesn't mean you have to churn and burn everybody out of your life. It actually might be the opposite, like it was with you. You might actually have, so for me, I just churn and burn everybody out. For you, what you did is you just kept everybody in. Neither of those were a positive thing, right? Okay. So I could just churn and burn everybody out. You just surround yourself with absolutely everybody, no matter how damaging and toxic and self-esteem destroying they were. And you knew it, you just didn't know how to leave it.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're one of those two areas, the chances of your foundation being pretty cracked for any relationship you build, and it doesn't really matter. It's pretty tough to act one way. I know you think you can. You can hide it for short periods of time. But in general, if you look at it on the overall picture of things, you will find a pattern. Mm-hmm. And that pattern is only yours to fix. Nobody's going to fix that for you. And you're the only one who's going to be able to do it. And it does take an intensive amount of work and insight and awareness and feedback then from others that you trust to get it in motion. But once it's in motion, it's actually pretty easy. And it doesn't mean that nobody's ever going to leave your life. God forbid people leave me my life all the time now. But, you know, but usually you can see it for what it is, because it's different if you're just turfing people out of your life because you're cracked, you're damaged, and you just are like, well, it's everybody, the whole world is against me sort of idea.
Yeah.
Or if you're just keeping everybody in your life because you're afraid that if you say something that then you're going to have nobody, right? There's somewhere in between those two worlds is where relationships can be built. You probably find your circle is going to be a bit smaller, but it depends on what you want. And solid long-term relationships built on really solid foundations that the two people have worked together on their own foundations are much more fulfilling, much more sustaining, much more joyous. They don't have the happy kickstart of adrenaline as much, but they're much more sustainable and they feel better long term because they're more stable.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, a lot of the, like, I think this is a probably like, I think my 43rd podcast interview. And most of the people that I've interviewed who have been people pleasers, a lot of them have noticed, have had mentioned that is that their circle of influence does get smaller, but becomes more enriching. Mm-hmm. Like their relationships are more enriching. And I think part of this too, is that we also have to go back to our health of our body, because we got to talk about the right brain. And we know that the right brain prefrontal cortex is all about that connection.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the left side of the brain is where happiness happens. And that's how a lot of people are getting addicted to social media, because that gives you a little bolt of dopamine. So if you do a Facebook post or Instagram and you got so many friends, it gives you a little boost to the left brain.
Yeah.
But joy is in the right brain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we need to actually make sure you're healthy too. Like you have to physically move, fire that right brain in order to keep us even in the place where we can have proper connections. And as we talk about in our vitality shift, we talk about the hierarchy of vitality, like the top two levels that we try to get everybody to are creation and connection. And that only happens when our brain's healthy.
Right. And I would say that the majority of people that we are in relationship with today are not healthy. And by healthy, we mean the way the brain is working and firing and viewing the world and viewing others. And so It requires, in a professional world, it requires you as the chiropractor or you as the chiropractic advocate to be as healthy as possible, because you have to, again, that is the pathology of the wounded healer phenomenon, is when we're not, and we can't see our own fractures in our foundation. And professionally, now we're trying to help people that are far more fractured than we are. And we don't fire properly, and we don't view the world the way that we should be viewing the world. Not the way in which it was in the past for us, or not the way altered by all the emotions we have. And, you know, so that's, you know, we talk about health being this physical state of health, and yes, that's part of it, but it really is in relationship to the way that we view the world and the way that we connect with other people. And that is one of the deep wired human needs, is that connection that happens in relationship with somebody. And it's becoming a lost art as our kids' brains change with how much social media and computer time that they have. And it's a wiring that we all have as humans, is to be deeply connected to others. And the only way that that works well is for us first to be healthy. And then secondarily to do that allows us to just be strong enough, physically strong enough to emotionally do the work we need to heal the foundation.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you say about people who come up to you all the time and say, how do you work with your husband?
Well, I don't even get that from people when I'm on traveling. I get it from like practice members, and it's always amazing to me. They're like, I could never work with my spouse. I'm like, well, do you live with your spouse? Like, that's like saying I could never live with my spouse. I could never be in the same place as my spouse. So I always say this, okay, not working together is not for everybody, for sure. For sure not. I would say the majority of people though that have had challenges working together don't realize it has nothing to do with the business. It has everything to do with the relationship. Because if in your relationship you have a cracked foundation, when you take it into a business place, a business model, it puts it on steroids. It illuminates all those cracks. And the worst part about it is now you can use those cracks and argue about things that appear to be business orientated. So you spend most of your time on that and not recognizing it has everything to do with what's going on in the relationship personally. Not the other way around. A lot of people think, well, business wrecked my relationship. No, your relationship was wrecked before you went into business. Business merely illuminates all those cracks in the foundation that you have in your marriage or relationship. And if you're not able to work through that, you're absolutely right. You should not be working with your spouse, because it will then continue to crack the foundation. The house will crumble, and it will just be the place it happens. It's not because of it. It will just happen to be the place that it happens.
Well, and I think if you have a crack foundation relationship, the less time you spend with each other, the longer it can last.
100%. Oh, that, you know, we live in Alberta, where people travel for work, right? They work on the oil rigs and they work 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out. And I'm telling you, a lot of these, and they happen to be mostly men that are going up north. And so when they come home, the wives are often saying to us in practice, like, I could never live with him full time. I'm like, No, but I'll have six children with him. And, you know, like, it's just, it's crazy. That's the crazy of the brains that we're working with. So it's critical that we're not the same brain, and that we don't foster similar relationships. Because we have a level in chiropractic, we have access to principles that the world doesn't yet have access to. And because we have access to that, I think our responsibility is more so to be really aware of who we are and how we enter into relationship with everybody than just being randomly unconscious about it and consumed by getting a quick fix of happiness or a quick fix of adrenaline, which is what the whole world is doing. Mm-hmm. We can't be calibrating and resonating at the same level as everybody else is. And mm-hmm. because we are, I believe it's part of the problem that we're seeing in the profession. Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about unspoken expectations and maybe what they are and what someone could do to not do that.
Well, why don't you talk about it, since you're more of the style that would have unspoken expectations?
Well, I have an unspoken expectation that you're going to talk about it.
Actually, you asked me, so it's not unspoken. It's not.
Oh,
spoken.
Shoot. Okay, yeah. So I did.
See, look at how
I'm
much you've
so aware.
Oh, after aware. 19 years, you are starting to learn how to speak your expectations. Well, I would say the majority of we talk about this a lot in the Vitality Shift about the problem with unspoken expectations in relationship with practice members. We have them. They have them of us.
Yep.
And nobody ever talks about it. And mm-hmm. it's the same as any relationship, anything that you think somebody should be doing. The worst, if I can just gender bias a little bit, and I only do this because our brains are a little bit different. We do this a lot because women are wired. Okay. So we're just talking biologically wired in their brain to be a little more intuitive than men. We have a little bit of a sense of sometimes saying if we're in partnership with a male, sometimes we have a expectation that they should just know, like I don't understand why you don't know. So, you know, if I've told you a million times, I expect that you know that.
Right.
Now you don't do it. Now I'm irritated. And then you don't do it again. Now I'm irritated again. Now it just goes on and on and on. And then we have a big blowout. And usually what happens, what does the male say? Well, you could have just told me. And then I say, but I did tell you. And you say, well, you told me that one time. This is like specific to the event and the time. So I don't transfer that over to all of these other times. And so I think it happens both ways. I think what happens is we expect something of somebody because we think they should just know. And they should just know because they're in relationship with us. And we simply think that's enough. And I would say unspoken expectations probably lead to one of the biggest barriers in building a long-term relationship, because that's actually leads to contention and it leads to pressure. And then we start arguing, or we start, you know, that with practice members, if they don't say what they need to say, they're disappointed. They leave negative Google reviews. They're upset. But they never, ever said what they needed to say. And we didn't foster an environment where they could. That's the other thing, is that if you're not in a safe environment, your partner or your relationship or whoever it is never going to say what they need to say. So it is your responsibility to, again, you can't do this with a cracked foundation, but it's your responsibility to foster a safe enough environment that you would be able to ask something of somebody and have it received. And if you don't foster that environment, you can never do that. And then we live our lives with this really quiet, unspoken relationship of things that we wanted from the other person that we never got, or they were incapable to give us and we didn't recognize that. And then that ultimately ends the relationship as well.
Well, I think that's huge in chiropractic. On our end, we know that there's probably an expectation that is that's unclear of. And so a lot of times, like, if we don't really close the loop in our report of findings or really like get an agreement solidified, then we're left wondering as well. So it's not just that we have unspoken expectations, but we already have an intuitive feeling that they do.
Yeah.
Or we're not clear on what their goals are. And in the past, this is what I would do, is just let it slide.
Yeah.
It would be like, let's just let it go and we'll see how it goes. When that usually doesn't go good at all. Because if you have a feeling like there's something not clear, it is not clear.
It is not clear. No.
And so that's where we, if you have that people pleaser mentality as a chiropractor, we do need to just ask them.
Yeah.
Like we said, and again, we've seen this with tons of chiropractors in our program in the Vitality Shift. They just have so much less stress now because now they just know, well, just ask. And again, if they don't want care,
yep,
that's okay.
Yep.
And if they have to do maybe a modified care plan, that's okay. We can work with it, but let's just be clear. And instead of like ramming stuff down their throat or else feeling like that they can't take it and not telling them what we think.
Totally. And it's the same in any relationship, right? Mm-hmm. You know that feeling. It's creepy. There's something underlying. You know something's going on. I just think back in my 20s, I lived with a boyfriend for 2.5 years. And, you know, we would go, like, seriously, I think we went a week without talking to one another. And we lived in a one-bedroom apartment. Okay, so I'm not talking like we lived in this 10,000 square foot mansion. We went a week without talking. We would go days without talking to one another because I was mad. He was mad. I can't, you know, like this is 25 years ago. I don't even remember all the
reasons. You're like, who's going to give in first?
Totally. And shocking, that relationship didn't make it. And so it's just amazing. And there's a difference between having an expectation and asking for it and parenting a relationship. So I just want to just mention that quickly because a lot of people think if I ask for something or I have an expectation, then if I do that all the time, I'm nagging or I'm like parenting. So there is a difference because if you're not careful, you also don't want to be parental in the relationship either because now you have a power imbalance. And as soon as you have a power imbalance in a relationship, whether you're a chiropractor with a practice member or with your team or with your intimate relationships, you automatically are losing in your relationship. That power imbalance that occurs is when people become parental, they become directive, they can become abusive. That's all underlying that power imbalance. That's very different than having expectations of your partner and asking for something and the partner having a solid enough base or solid enough foundation to know whether or not they're capable of doing that or not.
Mm-hmm. And then this goes back to our, I always like to think back to the healthy brains, right? Because if we're all in our left brain, we are going to, when we have a stress response, we're going to freeze. So we don't even want to do anything.
Yeah.
But if we're in the right brain and we have hope,
yeah.
We are more willing to get uncomfortable because we know we're not going to end, like we're going to have a conversation. We're not going to lose the relationship, right? It's not going to be the end of the world. And if we're more in our right brain, we have that feeling like things will be okay. It's kind of like how you said you want to create a safe environment for your people.
Yeah.
If we keep our brain healthy, well-adjusted, good posture, nice exercise, we keep our brain in a safe position.
Always. Totally.
So that we actually feel safer to do those, make those decisions ourselves. And if our brain is not healthy, like then you're never going to feel safe. Because even if you're in an external safe environment, you still don't feel safe inside your head.
No, 100% not. And I think you just have to, you know, if you're raising kids, back to marital relationships or spousal relationships, it is spectacular to me how many people that I know personally that have talked to me. Some of them are leaders, some of them are coaches, some of them are just are chiropractors in the trenches who are in relationship right now, just waiting for their kids to grow up.
To leave.
Yeah. And as soon as the kids are gone, the relationship will be over. Now, I'm not sure the other spouse knows that, but I'm fairly certain they don't.
That might be an unspoken expectation.
That's called an unspoken expectation. And there's a whole, I mean, we're out of time now, but there's a whole dynamic around what happens to children when they grow up in an environment of their parents with this completely crumbled foundation of a marriage that happens to those children's brains. There's a whole dynamic that happens around that. And so I think that just on one of the final notes of children, because a lot of people that listen to the podcast have kids, the best thing you could do to teach your kids, I never give parenting advice per se, although I have to tell you that my post-grad wasn't parenting. So, just because I don't have kids, but anyways.
Hey, we have a dog.
But what I can give advice on is the way that our children learn is really through observation and downloading energy and downloading experiences. They don't have the language ability or the logic part of the brain developed to any degree until they're quite a bit older. And so when they watch and download relationships of unspoken expectations, of resentment, of anger, of basically two people who came together with damaged foundations and built a big damaged foundation called a family. Our children just recreate that over and over and over. And generationally, you know this to be true if you grew up like that. Mm-hmm. And then if we don't have any awareness, we just keep repeating that over and over and over. And it bleeds into everything you do. And I see a lot of these chiropractors in leadership positions or coaching positions filling some of those cracks elsewhere. And they're filling it with their coaching, and they're filling it with their speaking, and they're filling it with their practice members. And we have the wounded healing phenomenon rather than just filling their cracks independently. And they would find actually, if they could do that, probably the house will still crumble that they're living in right now, because they may or may not have a spouse that's willing to do the work for themselves as well. Mm-hmm. But they would find that their healing ability, their ability to really touch the world is what they're trying to do, would be so much deeper and so much more powerful if they could do that.
Mm-hmm. It also has to be like 100% effort on both
yeah.
sides.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool. So where are you going to be? We got to wrap up this podcast.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be? What's going on?
Well, this podcast will come out in April, right? So
this is coming out the second week in April, right after our birthdays. And nice. The week before, we're going to Malacca to Cairo, Europe.
Oh, so it's coming out after Cairo, Europe.
No, right before Cairo, Europe.
Okay, well then, perfect. So I will be April 14th then, for those people that are listening. I will be in Peterborough, Ontario at the Peterborough Chiropractic Association. Super excited to go there. I've never been to Peterborough. I love going to Canadian places I've never been to. That's hosted by Dr. Keith Thompson, who is a shifter, but more exciting than that, he has been in practice for 40 years and he still shows up and takes notes and learns. And he's a legend. He's a legend in Ontario, but, I know a lot of people maybe don't know of him, but he's organizing that particular seminar that workshop that I'm going to. So it's just a half a day on a Saturday. And then I fly home Sunday and we leave on Tuesday to go to Malaga, Spain for Cairo Europe. That's Dr. Mark Hudson's event. So after a short 30-hour commute, we'll get to Spain. And that's our first time to Cairo Europe. And so I've heard nothing but amazing things. I just had a conversation with the MC about it. So it sounds like that should be fun. So we'll bring our sunscreen. And then May is really actually looking pretty solid for getting steady with Southside Chiropractic, but June is going to be our Vitality Shift Immersion Day in London. So that'll be the next big thing coming up in the UK for us. It's going to be June 23rd. Registration is open now at trueconceptseminars.com. And yeah, I've had some questions about the Vitality Shift. So you and I will probably do some videos on what that's going to look like in London when we're there. So yeah, mm-hmm. Should be busy for the next few months.
And for those interested in the Vitality Shift, we only open it periodically, but if you go to www.thevitalityshift.com, you can go on the waiting list for when we do open that. And if you are interested in registering for the seminar in London, where we'll take you 8 hours through immersion day, where we role play and you really get into communication, all the vital signs, care planning, that's going to be, you can find that at www.trueconceptseminars.com, and the registration page is on that page.
Awesome. Congratulations on your podcast. You hit 50,000 downloads. It's exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. 50,000 downloads. And that's great. And like I always like to leave the end, what's your parting words of wisdom for all the underdog nation out there?
The underdog nation. I love it. Well, since it was on relationships today, I think my parting words are just you are in relationship with yourself first and foremost. And if you can heal the relationship you have with yourself, the chances of you building sustainable, long-term, healthy relationships is astronomically higher. So I think that's the key with relationship. It's never going to be about the other person, yet it's always about the other person. Right? So it's never the other person. It's always the other person. And it's always going to start with your relationship with yourself.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing your pearls of wisdom, my dear.
Thanks, honey. Thanks for having me.
I've trained you well.
Thanks,
honey. So everybody out there, get in those relationships, clear up those boundaries, get those unspoken expectations thrown out the windows. And till next time, crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.